So at this time, I'd like to call to order the work session for Tuesday, October 18th. And we'll start. We don't have a candidate for the item number one, so we'll go to item number two, Canadian Pacific Rail. So welcome and thank you for coming.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members.
Hi.
We were here last June talking about the CP Rail Regional Trail, a future trail that will go from roughly Becker Park down through Golden Valley. And we had someone from Three Rivers Park District here that night giving a presentation. They've spent the summer doing a lot of public engagement, getting a lot of input, and they are here again to provide their another report to us. So I'd like to introduce Jonathan Blaming. He is from Three Rivers Park District, and you can take it away.
Very good. Good evening. As John said, I'm Jonathan Blaming, Associate Superintendent of Planning and Design for Three Rivers Park District. I am pinch hitting tonight for Kelly Grisman, our Director of Planning, and Kelly and Danny McCullough, who is here with me tonight, have been leading the planning effort on this trail. With respect to time, I'm going to do a truncated slideshow for you folks, because I do realize time is of the essence and that you've had this in your packet. I do want to talk briefly about the engagement work done, our staff recommended route, and then a request. We're not looking for a motion, but we are looking for head nods this evening. It's our midpoint check-in, so to speak. Did a tremendous amount of public engagement throughout this effort. Over 2,800 postcards were sent out to people on either side of potential trail routes. We did email blasts, and I'm not going to read through the list, but I can tell you that Crystal also helped with notifications. They did social media email blasts of their own, newsletter updates, put information on your website, and then also did mailings for residents for some park meetings this summer. We did have an online website as well for public engagement. Over 1,900 people engaged online. They could do this 24/7, whenever they felt like it. And we had over 3,700 people in attendance at in-person events. And our in-person events range from going to Crystal-sponsored programs as well as the other two cities, to actually having pop-up events in the neighborhoods along where the trail may be routed. We had 186 people engaged within the city of Crystal proper. And again, there's a list of the different engagement sites that I'm, for the sake of time, I will not go through. And we looked at three routes. This map, I don't think I can move the window of the person, but or maybe they can for me. Thank you very much. Moving from the south, there were two initial north-south routes, one on Douglas going up to 32nd Avenue where it connects to Bassett Creek Regional Trail, and then the other one in blue along Winnetka. The Douglas route split, and we had two alternative routes. One of them follows Bassett Creek Regional Trail over to Winnetka at 36th, where it continues north along Winnetka for a couple blocks, cuts back into Quebec, hits the New Hope YMCA, Pub 42, and some of the businesses in that area, along with a major park on one side and the railroad on the east side, up to Fairview Avenue, and would then follow Fairview back to Douglas Avenue and then north to Becker Park, where it would terminate and connect to the Crystal Lake Regional Trail and the future Botno LRT. The other alternative route for the Douglas Avenue, Douglas Drive, is simply to continue it along Douglas Drive the entire length. And so we showed those, and what we heard was about half of the people preferred the Winnetka-Douglas hybrid route. That's the one that goes up to 32nd and then cuts over to Winnetka for a while, gets onto Quebec, and then Fairview back to Douglas. People are interested in getting to their parks, their trails, their community centers, to restaurants, and to family and friends. This gives you a very detailed breakdown of support by age for the different routes. And what you will see within the Crystal events, across all age groups, the Winnetka Douglas was the preferred route. We also looked at sort of the metrics of the two routes. We'd taken at this point Winnetka only routes off of out of consideration due to very low public support for that one. And what we found was the Winnetka Douglas route and the Douglas only route were very similar with connections to the top three places to visit or to walk and bike and visit. With regards to equity, we did find the Winnetka-Douglas route to provide greater equity. In particular, our target markets are BIPOC communities, people who are over 75, young people, and then households with annual incomes under $50,000 a year. And so there's a slightly better equity impact for the Winnetka-Douglas route. And for road driveway crosses, driveway crossings, you always want to minimize those as much as possible, though it's very difficult in an urban environment setting. The Winnetka Douglas also has about 15% fewer road and driveway crossings. On the flip side, the negative for the Winnetka Douglas is we do anticipate perhaps up to 15 easements, typically 2 feet wide along the right-of-way to be able to build the trail to our 10-foot standard. And there are also about 80 trees that would be impacted if that trail were developed along that route. The final decision on the exact location of the trail along a street and its impact and right-of-way actually comes in the design phase. And when we do design for any trail, we actively engage the residents along the stretch of the trail, and we get their input and we work with them to make the least impactful trail possible for them while still making sure that it's functional. Last but not least, the Winnetka-Douglas route is considerably less expensive than the Douglas-only route.
Why is that? Why is the Douglas route so much more expensive?
Danny, can you help me with that one?
I can help you with that one. It sure follows an existing trail.
The Douglas route has a lot more utilities that would have to be moved, and you would also have to construct... currently, I believe it's like a 4-foot shoulder, so you would need to go to like a 2-foot shoulder, curb and gutter, in order to reduce impacts to private property. So there's just a lot more construction along Douglas.
Yeah. Utilities just by themselves would do the difference. They can get very, very expensive to be moving telephone poles, as well as also dealing with sewer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Along that line, when you did the trail along 32nd, crossing Douglas into Bassett Creek, you had to move utilities there, didn't you? Or no?
I believe we did.
I think you did.
Yeah.
You moved them out a little bit.
Yes.
Make way for that trail.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And it is one of the costs of doing a trail in fully developed area, and it's a cost we're willing to incur. Our recommended route is the Winnetka-Douglas route. As I described earlier, we believe that it serves the greatest number of people. It has potential for a loop. If Hennepin County so decides to continue to develop a trail within Douglas Avenue or Douglas Drive, that is a county road, of course, and they do have a mill and overlay project coming up in 2025 or 2026. But we support the idea of creating as many loops as possible. People do love loops. In this case, it would be an 8-mile loop serving the residents of Crystal and New Hope and to a lesser degree, Golden Valley. We also found the Winnetka-Douglas route to be scenic and quieter. It's off of it's on less busy streets. And we've also found with our visitors and with the public input that that's really what they're looking for. And I don't have my last slide, but that doesn't matter. My last slide basically says, so what we are looking for at this time from you folks is I'm here to answer questions to the best of my ability and to also see if I can get some head nods or yes, we like the Winnetka Douglas, please proceed. This is our midpoint check-in. Our next step after we've had everybody in agreement upon the preferred route is then we actually write the master plan. And then we bring back a draft master plan for your review and formal approval later. Not this year, be early next year. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
All right. Thank you, Jonathan. Questions?
Just a quick
one. Go ahead,
Nancy. As far as budget goes, could you help refresh me? Is Three Rivers paying for this, or?
Mayor, commission, or city council members. Yeah, the intent would be for Three Rivers to cover all costs.
Okay.
In regional trail development, we do not ask the local cities to participate.
Okay.
In this case, we will probably be trying to get a federal transportation grant to build this trail. And we would apply for it as part of the what's called the RAISE program. We would find out next August if we're successful. And unfortunately, federal grants do take some time. It would take about 5 years to get the trail built based off that federal grant.
Thank you. That was my second question, was timeline.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right. Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate your time.
Do you have any input on the route?
Do I have any input on the route?
Yeah.
Head nods.
Yeah.
Head nods.
If I recall, it's kind of what the one we kind of head nodded before.
Right.
So
very good. Thank you.
Informal head nod. All right. Thank you. All right. We will at this time continue the work session in lieu of the EDA meeting.
All right. All right. We'll call the EDA meeting to order. Time is 6:35. John, will you do a roll call, please?
All right. Thank you, President Banks, Commissioner Adams.
Are you here?
Here.
Commissioner Banks.
Present.
Mr. Buduszewski. Commissioner Cummings. Commissioner Kaiser.
Here.
Commissioner LaRoche.
Here.
Commissioner Parsons.
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. Let's see. First agenda item is approval from the October 3rd. Minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve.
All right. Commissioner Adams.
I'll second that. Thank you.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The ayes have it. All right. On to number four, public hearing. Consider a resolution authorizing the sale of 4824 56th Avenue North for construction of a two-family dwelling.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a property that you saw in May. We had two proposals. The proposal that you gave tentative acceptance to determined that they did not want to proceed, and so we're back with the other proposal for tonight's meeting. So the property of 4824 56 is adjacent to a former gas station. There are some soil issues on that gas station related to contamination underground tanks. However, there does not appear to be any contamination on our property to the west. And that said, we still needed to go through MPCA to get what's called a construction contingency plan that would describe what mitigation would occur if after we sell the lot and the builder starts digging, they find something. And I'll get to that in a minute. As I mentioned, the other builder did withdraw about a week and a half ago. And so we went back to the other builder that submitted back in May and asked if they were still interested. And Nick Remler is here. That is the other builder. And he would like to proceed. His company is called Ascent Builders. As with the other proposal, this would be for a twin home on this lot, which is sufficient for a two-family dwelling. Their proposal has not changed since May 17th. The builder plans to live in one unit and rent the other, so a CIC is not needed, but that would be an option in the future if he were to choose to sell it to two separate owners. One thing that has come up because of that CCP that we had to do for the MPCA is that in order to discover if there is any other stuff underground, the excavation for the house, the building needs to occur. But the excavation can't occur until we sell the lot to the builder. So for that reason, we are proposing to set aside an escrow so that if materials are found, up to $7,500 of those costs would be covered out of our sale proceeds. If the cost goes beyond that, the builder would then have the option to basically it would be an off-ramp for the builder. And we would repurchase the lot, and now we would have more information about our lot, and then we could decide how to proceed with trying to sell it or try to do something else with it. I want to emphasize that we think the likelihood of this is very low. Again, that we've done multiple rounds of different types of testing on this property. But we did not demolish the house that used to be there. That was done two owners ago. And then it went through foreclosure. Well, the second owner was actually the bank. So I'm counting them as an owner. But anyway, so because we weren't the party that did the demolition, it is possible that there are bits of the old foundation in there. Or again, we're not going to know till we know. So that's why we created this provision for an escrow from the sale proceeds, so that we're anticipating that. If it happens, we're prepared for it. And there is a kind of a ceiling, though, on how much we'll pay out of our proceeds. The builder's off-ramp is the ability to sell the property back to us if the costs go above what the escrow will cover. So that's kind of a new provision unique to this situation. So I want to pause there and see if there are any questions from the EDA board about that escrow provision.
You answered, you very thorough. You answered the question I had, so.
All right. So the Ascent proposal, again, is the same one you saw in May. They're proposing to purchase the lot for $115,000. That's $15,000 more than we had put out as our minimum price in our RFP. It's a 1.5. I'll just go right to the plans. There's the site sketch. And there is the floor plan. They would be mirror images of each other. There's a bedroom and a den on the main floor, along with living, dining, kitchen areas, and a laundry, and a two-car garage. And then upstairs, there's a loft with another bathroom and two additional bedrooms. So it's a fairly sizable house in terms of living space, even though it doesn't have a basement. Here's the front elevation. This would be the view from Bass Lake Road, and the rear elevation below. So tonight, we are asking you to hold a public hearing. Take any comments. Again, I know Nick, the builder, would be happy to address you if you like. And then once you've concluded the public hearing, to adopt the resolution authorizing the sale of the plot.
Right. Right. Do we have anybody submit anything for the public hearing? Comments?
Mr. President, you should just open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone, and then
go from there. All right. All right, at this time, we'll open the public hearing to consider a resolution authorizing sale of the 4824-56 Avenue North for construction of a two-family dwelling. Anybody have anybody here for that?
Testimony.
Okay. Seeing none, and I will close the public hearing. And next, then, what's our... Looking for a motion now, right?
Motion on the resolution, please.
Thank you. I have a motion on the resolution.
I'm finding my notes. I apologize. Make a motion to adopt the resolution authorizing the sale. Am I correct on that? For up to 4824-56 Avenue North for construction of a two-family dwelling.
All right. So I have a second. Commissioner Adams?
I'll second that motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, eyes have it. All right, property status update.
So in the interest of time, I won't go through everything because I think Ann sent out a very detailed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Before we get off that topic.
Yes.
He's done, right?
I'm sorry. Yes. Unless do you have anything?
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Right. Congratulations, and we look forward to your building. All right. Thank you.
Good. Work with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep. Sorry.
It's okay. So you got the construction update from Ann on Friday, I believe, through email. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about those, but there was a fair amount of detail in that already. So I wasn't going to add anything else in the interest of time unless you had questions or wanted to discuss anything else about construction activities.
I don't have any particular question. I just wanted to comment that there's an awful lot going on. Mm-hmm. It's really nice to see that list, as long as it was, to see things getting filled, things being renewed in the community. So it was a great list. We got some new activity with the Women's Center. I think that's awesome. So yeah,
What is Snipes?
Snipes is a semi-national, meaning kind of upper Midwest regional clothing store and shoe store chain. They kind of, I think they focus on a young clientele. So like sports shoes and I don't know, nothing I would buy. So I know only what I saw on the web.
Well, that's, I feel like I'm somewhat in the know, but I hadn't heard. And this is going in the former Half Price book space.
Yes.
For those listening. So I'm excited because that's been vacant for quite a while. Very cool. Thank you.
There's some activity over at 36 and Douglas. And then even up at the former Burger King.
No, I didn't see that one.
There's some construction going on inside the building.
Yep, and the Burger King is underway. They're remodeling to an office, and the former Pizza Hut, thanks to efforts of our Public Works Department, they were able to coordinate the installation of the water service for their new fire sprinkler line, concurrent with work that we were doing to replace some valves, I think, on 36th Avenue, and that saved the owner a fair amount of money and only had one road closure instead of two. So that's good for everybody.
That's great. I
wondered why there were so many valves. Saw the valves sitting on the side of the road. And it's like, that's more than just sprinkler.
All right. Anybody have anything else? All right. Any other business?
No, sir.
Nope. Commission? All right. Seeing none. All right. I have a motion to adjourn the EDN.
I'm on a roll. Make a motion to adjourn.
I have a second.
I'll all second right. that.
Commissioner Adams. All in favor of adjournment?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. The ayes have it. Is that it?
No.
Okay. All right.
It was a blast from the past.
All right. 6:46.
Different behaviors from long ago.
All right, well, back to the work session.
Yep, I think so. All right. So if we got 15 minutes, you are ready to go? Is that enough time?
I am.
Awesome. Thank you. This is our chief. Welcome, sir.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you for allowing me to present our quarterly update. From January 1st to September 31st, we've had 877 calls for service for a $910,030 estimated fire loss. In Crystal, that came to 367 calls for service. And in New Hope, it was 483. So again, the divide's pretty similar to last year. And we're running to about the same amount of calls in 2022 as we did in 2021. Last February, our officers began developing a tool intended to implement regular check-in meetings between each firefighter, officer, and their supervisors. The check-in was created to stimulate engagement, participation, and retention of effective contributing firefighters and officers. It was a design for them to get together and have an honest and open conversation. We will begin to conduct these check-ins in October. This is not a traditional performance appraisal, but a review of overall achievements as well as areas for development for each individual. And each meeting will create or strengthen a connection between each individual and their supervisors. Thank each member for their service to the community. Compare individual participation to department standards, norms, and overall performance statistics. And remind everyone of how doing this work, working shifts, making calls, training hard, participating in events, and contribute to community safety and stability and vitality, department strength and effectiveness, and support for teammates who are shouldering the workload. So that's something we're really looking forward to. And they'll run through October and November, probably the first part of December. We had one resignation from firefighter Raul Valdez, just resigned on August 29th after serving the district for 7 years. We also had a recruit, Stephanie Thielbar, who took a leave of absence soon after starting with us and officially resigned effective August 24th. She is going on to get her graduate degree in nursing. She's a North Maryland paramedic at this time. We have completed our promotional process for all officers. So we have a whole new set of officers that started in the beginning or mid-July, and they were just sworn in and pinned at our last board meeting on the last week in October. So as far as recruiting goes, we had about 45 applications, and our goal was to bring on between 15 and 20 firefighters. We gave conditional offers to 20 candidates. One did not accept, so we were running through our process 19 candidates. And they all came back from the BCAAs, passed a background check, which is really fabulous as far as we're concerned. So they will now start to take their psychological, their physicals, and their physical ability testing. And then we're hoping to bring all of the candidates on by the end of November. But two of those candidates, who are both Golden Valley firefighters, are fully trained. They attended our academy last January. And they'll start November 1st, and they'll get pushed through just learning our equipment and how we do things. And then they'll move on to being apprentice firefighters right away. So it's kind of exciting. So hopefully we'll all get through it.
That's nice.
We put our ballistic vests in service on October 11th, and that went really well. So they're now looking at wearing them. They're required to wear them with just the way they are for drug overdoses and incidences, domestic violence incidents, or addresses that have been flagged by dispatch. They're required to use the vests with the plates, the rifle plates, for active shooter or active threat incidents, shooting or stabbing incidents, bomb threats, suspicious package incidents, incidents that involved or are near civil unrest and SWAT incidents. And then we're recommending that our firefighters wear them while they're completing scheduled EMS shifts and if they're out doing inspections. We have three remaining engines that are listed for consignment with Brindley Mountain Fire Apparatus. We have about four interested parties in the engines, and one of them is coming tomorrow to take a look at it, so that's good. We're hoping, with the increases in pricing that's going on with newer vehicles, that it might even be more of a good thing that we have them for sale. So hopefully we'll get a premium price for them. The delivery of the first truck has been delayed and is expected to arrive in February of 2023, and the others will follow in March to April. I had met with the fire chief from Columbia Heights, and he was telling me that in January of 2021, they purchased an engine for $644,000, and that was delivered 12 months later in January of 2022. In October of this year, the same year that they had delivery of the engine, they purchased a replica of that engine for $828,574 for an increase of $184,574 and a delivery time of 30 months. And if they would have waited just a couple more days at the beginning of November to order that truck, it would have been $882,473 for a $238,000 increase to that price. So I think that, however, why we made the decisions that we did, that you guys did, it was good. It worked out in our favor, I think, to purchase all of them at the same time. As far as prevention goes, since the first of the year, we've conducted 793 inspections. 257 of those inspections required a reinspection, and we have completed 232 of those reinspections. We have done 24 home safety surveys so far in 2022, and it is fire prevention. Well, it was just fire prevention week, but it's kind of like fire prevention season for us. And we are doing programs for pre-K through second grade in all seven of the district's elementary schools and numerous preschools. We are also working with CCX to develop a short garage fire safety video that should be hopefully coming out before the snow flies. We held an open house on October 4th, and that was well attended by the public. And we are doing truck or treat on October 31st at all three stations. And we'll be handing out glow sticks in all the neighborhoods. That's what I have. Does anybody have any questions for me?
No, but you did a nice send off for Ann Norris at our last fire board meeting, I have to say. And we have our Ann quotes. I think your favorite was keep it together, people.
Your outgoing quote.
That was one you could repeat.
That's good. That's good.
Nice.
G-rated.
Yeah.
This morning.
Yeah. Any questions for the chief? No, just a comment on the open house. I was surprised for a weeknight how many people showed up. That was awesome.
I think it's because we had hot dogs.
Hot dog. Well, yeah.
That we helps. Thought of that. We were like, okay, if they're going to be here early, we have to feed them.
Feed them. Awesome. That's well, good nice. Job. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. All right. So... Please, Chief Stephanie Revering, can you do it in five minutes?
Five, Mayor. I promise. Here we go.
Wow. You don't Ready? Have to, but
I don't know. Go. I can. Let's go. Okay, next slide, Matt. Oh, do I have to do it? There. Okay. Sorry, Matt. Oh, there we go. Okay, agenda. So here's our agenda. Staffing updates, update on new PD, Tri-City partnerships, and community engagement. So we'll start with staffing updates. We are in the middle of police officer hiring. We're hoping to make two offers here after backgrounds are being completed. We have a continuous process going on just because of the amount of applications that we're receiving is a lot lower than normal. So we continue the process instead of closing it. Community service officer hiring update, that too, we are hoping to offer a few positions here soon. They will be going into the background phase as well. And then with the retirement of Sergeant Doug Leslin, we will be promoting a sergeant in the near future as well, hoping to post that promotional opportunity here in the next week or so. So new PD update, I thought I would just show you this fun picture. That actually is, that's my dad, retired Chief Andy Revering, and myself in a Minnesota North Stars jersey, in case you can't see that. Those of you who don't know who the Stars are, you can look it up. My dad was here actually a couple weeks after the grand opening, and so he was fortunate enough to be able to see the statue along with the new PD. I will tell you that we have been in there now for a little over 3.5 weeks, and Brian and I were just discussing that it is still a surreal moment for us. Every time we walk across the building and walk over here, we were saying, wow, this is a really long walk, only because it's just such a huge building, and we're just so grateful, and it's been a phenomenal experience for all of us. We do have a large punch list item, which is very normal, just so you know, that we're working through and will continue to work through for over the next several months. Our Tri-City partnerships, as you know, we share right now a mental health social worker, but because of the preliminary levy that you have technically passed and will pass hopefully in December, we will be getting our own full-time mental health social worker, so we're excited about that. And then our West Metro SWAT team continues to train monthly. In fact, I believe they have a training tomorrow, which is a good thing. The nice thing is, as you know about the SWAT team, is you want them highly trained. You just don't want them highly used. And the good news is we haven't had to use them for quite some time, which is great. And then our JCPP program, which is Joint Community Police Partnerships. As you know, NECA has been our embedded person for the last year and a half or so. And I just found out the other day that New Hope and Robbinsdale will shortly be getting theirs as well. They are in the process of hiring through the county another JCPP liaison for them. And then community engagement, just a quick recap of our Tri-City Community Forum that some of you were at. Thank you. It went very well. We had probably approximately 60 people, I would say, there. And we'll continue to do those. It's something that we're proud of that we started here several years back and we'll continue to do. One thing of note that we did recognize during that program is that we need to make sure that we are reaching out to those people of color in our community to make sure that they feel like they're being heard. So that's something that we're looking forward to partnering with our JCPP coordinator on and partnering with other cities. Community Police Academy, that is wrapping up actually next Tuesday. It's been going very well. I've heard from Sergeant Dorr and saying that it's been fun and exciting. And I see Brian's coming to the microphone, so I'm going to pause. Oh, keep going. Okay, and then Shop with a Cop. So put it on your calendar. December 16th is a tentative date. We will do Shop with a Cop. We'll take anyone and volunteers for helping us out with wrapping presents for the kiddos.
Two additional things that I would just note to this slide. We participated in a nationwide Faith in Blue event 2 weeks ago. We had two events in Crystal that we sponsored, one in conjunction with three multicultural churches that are on 45th Avenue in the city. We did a couple different events with them. And then a large backyard barbecue at the near food shelf. And both of those are really awesome experiences to be a part of. And then they're trying to lock down the date, but we are planning right now along with Crystal and Robbinsdale on doing our second annual Santa parade through all three cities the evening of December 10th. So stay tuned for that.
Thanks, Deputy Chief. There we go. Mary.
At this time, I'd like to open up the work session again, and we'll continue with our list of things to do on the agenda. Anne, you want to go ahead with what are we at?
Sure, we're on the Bassett Creek Park improvements. And if you'll recall, at one of the budget work sessions this year, there was a quick discussion about the possibility of adding amenities at Bassett Creek Park to have some sort of a beer garden facility. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, you asked staff to do some research into that. And so we've started that, but we need some direction from you on sort of what your vision is for this and then how it might implicate some of our capital projects. So one of the big deals is liquor license regulations. So in your packet is a lengthy memo from the city attorney because it is complicated. Liquor laws are not straightforward. And so it seems to me or to Chrissy, Troy, John, and I, if you want to do the beer garden concept, there's a couple ways to go about it. You could do a short-term deal where you do temporary events, and they're tied to events. They're 12 days a year, or we could bring in vendors. And I want everyone to interrupt me because I am no expert on liquor laws. Troy and Chrissy are the liquor law experts. But, or we could bring in temporary vendors and see how they do. Like we do food trucks, beer trucks, beer vendors on weekends. We could go that we'd still have to have all the insurance and all that stuff. The other option could be having a more long-term permanent facility there that we either contract with a vendor or we do ourselves, like Golden Valley does with Brookview. I think that's a city operation. I think a lot of other cities do things with a vendor. The upside of the short term obviously is minimal investment except staff time on managing it, and you don't have a lot of capital expenses. The downside is you're limited in the number of days, and it takes a lot of staff time. Long-term, a more permanent facility is obviously, you know what you got, you might be able to get a long-term relationship, but there are obviously capital costs, and we would probably have to change the zoning for a permanent facility. Permanent concession stand, not tied to events, not tied to things like that. So that's one. You want me to stop or do you want me to keep?
Yeah, going? I want you to stop for a second.
Okay.
Zoning. Can you expand on that a little bit?
I may have to tap John Sutter because he's the genius on zoning. And here he is, ready.
So basically, if you want to have a permanent, like a building, an actual building, like think of Minnehaha Park in Minneapolis or Lake Harriet, something like that, we'd have to change our code to allow that in parks or in basically parks are zoned R1. So we need to amend the UDC to do that. But right now you can do a lot up to that point or short of that point. The most obvious thing you can do is have food trucks and beer vendors come in, there's no zoning issue whatsoever. They're not regulated at all by the zoning code. So just like food trucks in Becker Park, it's not a zoning issue at all. So there's that. We do allow temporary uses, like if you want to do a Oktoberfest tent or something like that, temporary structures, as long as it's 180 days or less per year. And that is already allowed as a temporary use in the UDC. So it's only if you want to basically have a space in a permanent building that is open more than 180 days a year that we would need to amend the text of the code. So any questions on that?
Yep, that's clear. Thank you. Okay. All right, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry. No, that's just on liquor is the one question. So keep that in mind. And then zoning. And of course, we can't construct a permanent facility in a floodplain. We've got to be mindful of that.
So the area that we were talking about was outside the floodplain.
Right. And John's got a map to show.
Okay, good.
Yeah, to show you. But I think go back to the other map. Please, John, because I think then that ties into the plans for Bassett Creek Park, because mm-hmm. the other thing that ties into that is the building and where it's proposed to be. And then if you'll recall earlier this year, we talked about a parking lot and there was discussion about expanding it, the one just south of where the building is. And there was talk about, no, I'm on the wrong, no, that's the right one.
That's right.
Anyhow, there was talk about expanding it and, you know, in the end, we ended up throwing out the bids because they all came in too high. But if you're really serious about this, this would be the time. Should we be looking at expanding the parking lot? Should we kick that can down the road about fixing the parking lot now and just limp along until we figure out what's going on with this?
Okay. You want comments now?
Yeah.
All right.
We need direction, right?
So on the parking lot, the parking lot has been trashed for many years.
Yes.
And another year of a trash parking lot at that state, it's not going to matter. It just isn't. I want to move forward with a vision. I'm more prone towards the permanent thing, so I would be interested in looking at the zoning and figuring it out what that looks like in terms of the other building or not. I don't know. The other building, I guess. It's not like I want to take that whole building and move it into that location because I don't think it'll fit there. You know, to have a multi-purpose room of any size or whatever.
Talk about that some more. Help us.
So
we're having a hard time understanding your vision.
Well, the vision, I'm having the hard vision, time understanding the vision, vision is to make a place where we can, where people can meet, coming from the Three Rivers bike trail, people from soccer, parents from soccer, people from the dog park, where it becomes a little bit more warm and welcoming to where they can come and they can get, whether they're interested in pops or soda pop or beer or whatever, just a place to gather. And I think as far as concessions, it would be nice if there was the opportunity to have like a fry, whatever they call those things, the fryers.
You want a commercial kitchen?
Commercial kitchen is different. Okay. A commercial kitchen is way overboard in terms of money, I think. In as far as what we want to accomplish, we just want to be able to have a place where people can hang out, enjoy, you know, the lake is right there and there's some really cool wildlife there. There's a lot of activities there, but there's no place to really hang out unless you have an event. And I think also for the Frisbee golf, those guys are there, those men and women are there for, you know, most of the evening and you see them kind of sitting down in the middle of nowhere, you know, having conversations and, you know, either in between holes or, before or after, that'd be a great place for them to just kind of gather. And we have so much happening there that really kind of would play would play to that. I mean, you go to a restaurant or a bar that has like outside volleyball, and they always want to socialize before and after. And that's why, in my opinion, that's why a volleyball court and a bar setting works so much better than a park, because you really don't have that that place to hang out. And you know, we're planning on putting sand volleyball in somewhere. You know, right now it's located not very far from this space. I think we could really have something that's really unique and special for that park, and to make it unpredictable and temporary, okay. I think kind of undermines it.
What kind of capacity are you thinking? Size?
The capacity is going to be the picnic tables for the main part of it.
Okay.
You know, you just have to be able to house, you know, refrigerant. You have to have refrigerators for whatever beverages are being sold, and then, you know, a small fry kitchen. You know, not a full commercial, right. Okay. Because that's a whole different ballgame. Does that make sense?
Yes.
He's nodding.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, there's different levels of commercial kitchen. Right. So even a concession stand, you need 3 compartment sink, and you need there's things you need for even just a concession stand. So, but yeah.
You know, I see the chief moving forward, and that that obviously brings up some issues of alcohol
and the park
safety. Mm-hmm. And the places I've seen it happen, in parks, there's a designated area. Mm-hmm. It's not to be anywhere in the park. But I'm not going to assume. I know what you're thinking, so go ahead.
No, you can assume. So, I did, and Anne put this in the memo, but I did check with several of my colleagues around the area here and our next door neighbors all around, and then St. Louis Park. I checked with some other chiefs, and a few of the cities toyed with this idea in the last, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years or so, but decided against it for a couple different reasons. One is we would have to change our city ordinance, because right now, even though there is a, you know, if you want to put a designated area, there is still an ordinance that says you cannot drink in the park unless there is some type of an event with a permit. The other piece that is even more not necessarily concerning, but just that gives me a little pause, is if we are going to do this, that means that we the police, will end up doing compliance checks on that particular, wherever it is, if it's a building or whatever. And let's just say now that it's city employees that are the ones that are doing the selling, right? And now they fail the compliance check, right? So that causes me a lot of pause. So
if I had my preference, it wouldn't be city employees, it would be contracted. I think that goes beyond the scope of what city should be providing. I think there's people who can do a better job of it in because it's their field. Yeah.
But, yeah, and we'd still have to do compliance checks, right? And so if they failed, then we'd have to come before you. And
Yeah, but that wouldn't be the city or coming before the city. It would be their contractors coming before the city.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are there businesses that would be interested in having this location as a, you know, an event type?
Don't know. We don't. Not that far in the conversation.
If you're gonna have if you're gonna have somebody other than city employees run this thing, then we better get a sense from whoever does this, if they'd be willing to have a location like this that, again, I always say it's probably going to have a similar feel to the pool, because in terms of, like, you know, number of days open or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I understand your point, and I've seen restaurants who operate a restaurant do satellite things like that. It's not much different than a food truck for them. They take a portion of their staff and they handle that. They incorporate that. They bring them into it. That's happened. I forgot the name of it. Something Butcher in marinas and stuff like that. A lot of the marinas that have food, they have contracted restaurants to come in and do their food. Same situation.
So they probably have the equipment, right?
Right, but we have to make sure that we have something that can receive the equipment.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So you mean when you say like something, so you're talking about the actual structure.
Structure for refrigerator, structure for plugging in whatever they have to.
Okay, so, but not necessarily that we need to provide the actual freezers or refrigerators or various, because.
Don't have those answers yet. Okay. I don't know.
Right.
Because when I think of like the Frolics, for instance, like they actually have a, beer vendor. Let's say they have a, craft beer vendor that comes to it and they bring this trailer, right? And they have 15 taps on the outside or whatever. Well, I mean, it'd probably be nice if there was a structure that they could park this thing in, so it actually is more like, rather than you just standing outside of a, a trailer if it rains or if it's really hot or whatever, there's something that, you can kind of, I'll call it shelter, but, kind of like what we have like with our pavilions, multi-use, facility or something like that, as opposed to having, because we've talked about food trucks and I can see like, improving the parking lot or whatever, but you could probably make like a notch or something like that in the parking lot and then put a structure up and then they can park their trailer or their van or whatever in there and they can do business out of that, and then it's a designated spot. They more or less can contract with the city, to do the event for that period of time or whatever. Because it might not be as lucrative for one business as opposed to many businesses, because let's say you have a frisbee golf tournament, right? Well, then they would say like, well, sure, they can have their vendor come in, they can work with the city to set up this location and have the beer vendor, the food vendor for the event, right? And it's something that that they're going to support, right? Whereas if we just have it there as kind of like, well, people that are at the park can come and visit, it might not be as profitable as what, we think it should be, or advantageous to the business per se.
Sure. The couple things there. Number one, it's not necessarily about events. It's about creating a culture that people come to on a regular basis, the people who frequent that space. I don't want to put vendors in just for a tournament for Frisbee, because there's probably going to be leagues every night anyway, which is the same capacity as a tournament. Sure. Anyway. So how can we make it more predictable, more permanent in my mind? In terms of the business, I don't think a business would do it unless they felt it was worth it via advertising and actually having people show up. This park, in my opinion, has a lot of draw to it, and that would just be another place. And we talk about millennials oftentimes in how they drive so much of the economy, and they talk about their third place and where they want to hang out, they spend time. This could easily be one of those things, I think.
To John's point, I think we'd talk to catering companies to see about the level of interest, because to the mayor's point, I think we'd want it open certain hours predictably rather than random hours when they think it's lucrative. We would want them to be open, every day or whatever it is, from 3 to 9 or whatever, pick a number. So we would have to try to work with fine catering companies that are interested in doing something like that.
Or restaurants,
yeah. But they'd still have to have the correct licensing by the state. The challenges. I mean, one, we could certainly look at talking to catering companies or restaurants. We could do some market research to see if there's interest in that. I don't know what that looks like. I'm just throwing out ideas to see what the general public thinks about that idea. Yeah. And to show that we think that a restaurant or a caterer would find this lucrative.
In terms of a business in the city interaction and what that relationship looks like, what we're telling them and what they would like to do, I think we got to be careful. Hopefully the profitability will help drive exactly to the times, the periods of time we need to have served. I think that's kind of the same interest. And I think it's, we have to be careful to not tell them what we want overly to where we stop them from achieving success. That sort of thing. So, yeah, go ahead.
Is this an opportunity for vendors potentially to help raise money for the city or the parks, or you know what I mean? How the Frolics would have their vendors, but a percentage would go to the Frolics of the profits. I'm just spitballing here.
So I guess on the finances side of it, we're going to have capital outlay. It's going to be just like a park, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a building, or it may be a building. And at the end of the day, we're going to have some type of contract with whoever is going to be serving the community, right? And whatever that looks like, and we can have a quite a bit of input in that. I'm guessing it's not going to be a huge moneymaker.
No, but just something.
But there will be money coming in, and of course, yes, we can designate that to go wherever we want it to go.
Parks or something to benefit.
But okay. I think we have to be careful with, like so many of the things we do in parks, it's not necessarily about how much money can we make from it, because so much of what we do, clearly we don't make money. I mean, if you wanted to make the comparison to the pool, I mean, there you got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not making money on that. That's a service. And I look at this kind of very similarly. However, it does provide some revenue. And quite frankly, I don't know if it's good revenue or not.
I was wondering offsetting costs and things, or maintaining the building.
But if we're planning on doing a building anyway with restrooms and concessions, it could still be part of that building. You know, just because somebody's contracted to use that portion of the building where they're serving customers doesn't mean we can't have the back end of that building allowing access for the citizens to use the restroom. Maybe even a multi-purpose room that is smaller. I can't see a big one there that could be used by both, but so they're not necessarily renting that space. But yet, if it's raining out and people want to eat there, they're welcome to do so, you know, something like that. But again, that becomes a management thing. And if it becomes like a restaurant thing, we'd have to have something that says, hey, you guys are responsible for the cleanup of that, because it's going to be mostly your cleanup, because we don't want to necessarily have that burden as a city. I think there's a lot we can do there. What else were we going to do with that building? Seating areas, multi-purpose room, picnic shelters. Yeah, and the picnic shelter. I mean, we're going to have a picnic table. We won't necessarily have shelter next to the lake, but there can be quite a bit of seating there. Restrooms, yeah. So it's not that different of a concept, but it is. Go ahead.
Kind of talking about, you know, different businesses or how it looks. I think there's just so many questions about that. Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of interesting to see what other similar sized cities have done this. And maybe we can also look at what Minneapolis has done, but they'll be a little bit different, right? Because they probably have more people in those parks. Like I think of Minnehaha Falls and that, like that sandwich place or the fish place.
That fish place.
Yeah, so they would probably have more people. So maybe we wouldn't get that kind of traffic, but what other places would be similar that would kind of give us an idea of what to do. And, you know, we have ideas of what the restaurant might look like, or, you know, the whatever. And talking to different places, maybe they would have ideas that we would not even think of that would make
sense. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So it would be like foolish not to.
For sure. It just seems really early, but there's just a lot of good questions.
And yeah.
Like a lot of,
I agree.
A lot of things I think going forward on that.
Three Rivers French Park. Like they have the facility there.
So
what do they do at Three Rivers French Park?
They it's like a little concession stand thing right next to the play area right there.
Is that operated by them?
I don't know. That's why I'm saying. I just it's a facility there. That's, you know, that's
they used to be. I don't know how they operate.
Yeah, it's a facility that's operated that sells concessions, and you know that would be able to we could
and
figure out what, you know.
I mean, I've always had the. In my mind, in the vision, I always had, you know, supporting local businesses, supporting local breweries, supporting local, all the things that are Minneapolis centric, and bringing those into that thing to really make it part of the metro. You know, we can kind of have an identity with that. I think that would be really cool. Now, I've always also thought it was kind of a private thing that they would be able to pull that off. But if it's Three Rivers pulling it off, I don't know. if they can do it, they can do it well. They got the experience. Maybe that's a conversation we have. I don't necessarily want that to be the go-to, but it's certainly worth a conversation. Okay. Nancy.
Just looking at the plan here, is the wrinkle there that you want this concession building down by the pond? Or is this location that's being presented, if it were formatted a little differently, it's walkable space to a seating area down there. So does the concession area have to be down there, or could it be in that proposed building?
I would say yes. I would say that is one of the most beautiful parts of the park and the most underutilized part of the park. And I think that itself, having that seating in that space would be the draw to kind of be able to observe that lake.
I thought it was in a floodplain.
It wasn't, no.
No?
No. Mark pulled up the map. John pulled up the maps. And sorry.
I don't think it should be part of, what do you call it, that goes out into the lake or the pond, instead of in a lake.
No, that's not where the vision of the building would be. That would be where the picnic tables are.
But I thought, yeah, it should be closer to the parking lot. That pond is so pretty that you should just leave it the way it is.
Nobody will enjoy it there. I agree. No, I don't agree.
So can you go back to that other slide, John? That letter C in the hexagon, is that? is that where you're proposing it, or is that just...
The sea is from legend. The floodplain, no, so that's not
really. Yeah, no, this okay. Is just showing where the floodplain is. We don't have anything showing.
Okay. Right. My gut feeling is, before we talk about like where this can be located, we should, I think, David, you had a good point. Just, we need to find out like who can come in, what they can do, and does this look profitable and good? And I have a feeling that it is. I think it does have, I think it is a very good idea. I think it will be profitable and will be a good draw. So, I mean, I know restaurants like the Milton's would do like pop-up Milton's out somewhere, you know, in St. Louis Park or wherever they went to. So I think something like that is very good, but we definitely need to do the research that David, you said, before we even talk about where this thing is going to go.
Yeah.
Because we don't know. Exactly. That's, yeah. You know.
We do have options. I dislike the location of that building.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a concept plan.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
You know, once you start getting into development, then you can move things around.
Yeah.
Right. This is just trying to plug in the kinds of things that we want to see in the park. But when you actually get into design, that's when you start designing your parking lot and how everything fits together.
In the picnic shelter that's shown on the screen we're looking at right now, that's higher land, and that could actually be developed there, and it'd be closer to the parking lot that exists as well. You'd have to reroute some of the paths, I think. Certainly doable there, as well as where the path is on the south side of the soccer fields. It would be kind of on the edge of there. I mean, we got to be careful with that, because we can't cramp it too much, and we can't come too far into that peninsula because of the floodplain. So yeah, cool.
So I think
one quick question. My one thought would be, I was kind of leaning temporary, just because I'd be worried that there's not enough people that would take advantage of it. That would be one, but I would, if I would take an educated guess, I would say yes. That'd be one thing looking forward. You know, is there enough foot traffic, enough people in the park to support that kind of thing?
Once we're fully built out, yeah.
Yeah, I would guess, but that'd be my one kind of
And honestly, that same question could be related to the existing park building. Do we have enough traffic? Do we have enough, you know? And honestly, it's like, geez, there? Why there? You get to see someone's backyard and two parking lots, and it just doesn't have the feel that I think it should have. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, a lot more. Brendan.
If you build it, they will come.
There's that. Yeah.
All right. So we should.
All right, my favorite movie.
I know. Yeah, it's great.
I think what I'm hearing is we'll delay the parking lot. Then we'll incorporate that later on when we start talking about buildings and
things. Till we have a clue, right?
Yeah.
And we should do some cost estimates and talk to some potential vendors and see, love, and get contracts from other cities that have similar situations.
Yeah, it's not going to be like a RFP.
No. Just go see what it looks like and how they perform and kind of. Let's hope.
Okay. Thank you.
Done?
Almost. No, we've got four more items.
Oh,
city manager monthly check-in.
You got it.
Last month we
checked. Last, in. I know. There you go. So yes, your next meeting will be the first when you will be reviewing the finalists and making your selection.
Yeah. And look for, keep checking your emails this week.
Therese didn't get her attachment.
You know, maybe I can on my laptop at home. Yeah, check your phone. Okay.
Yeah, maybe a phone. Mark know if you can't get in.
Yep. All right. Constituent updates.
It's just the fence up at in the 5500 block of Lakeland. Their contractor was there last week, and I believe they're still putting in the new posts. So they have a deadline at the end of the month, and I know community development's on it.
Okay, good.
And if I could, Anna, and we could talk offline, but the property on Florida.
Yep, that's an ongoing enforcement effort.
Okay, appreciate that.
Yep,
thank you.
Yep.
All right, announcements. We kind of got announcements already. Nothing new. We're adjourned.